Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Hello and welcome. Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. And friends, it's here. It's here.
And we are joined by Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, the Fantasy Network. And guys, let me go ahead and do it. Let me go ahead and say it. I can sum this episode up in three words. Westeros is back. We are back. Jimmy, what did you think, my friend?
I mean, I'm captivated. Listen, I've been cautiously optimistic, and in the last 2 weeks, I've let myself get very, very excited for this show. And I felt very confident going in here. What we heard from George and Ryan Condell or Condell, whatever, everything leading up to this has been, you know, encouraging.
Right.
It went better than I ever could have imagined. And it's different in a way that I love. And we're not jumping across continents. We're not jumping apart, different parts of Westeros or anything. It's a different show, guys. This is a different show, but still maintains that quality. I mean, just little things, right? Allison's fingernails bleeding, her biting her finger. I mean, just things that are so small of detail, but then also has all of the grandiose, so epic shots that no one else can do. No one does it like this. My wife is not like, she's never even finished the original show. Like, she likes it, but she just kind of goes in and out of it, and she's still watching through it. Like, we got done, and she was like, that was a movie. She was like, that felt like when I saw Dune. She's like, it was an event. I was like, it was an event. In the pacing of the episode, I was very nervous because I heard some people say that it moved along a little quickly. I don't think so at all. Mm-mm. I thought that the overall theme that you could subtly pick up on, that they trusted you to pick up on, is that Viserys is a weak king. And then the climax of the episode is when Daemon says, you are weak. Mm-mm. I mean, tying those things together, and then you have, I mean, the birth scene might be one of the most disturbing things I've seen on television. I was getting a little like, I was like squirming in my seat a little bit. I lost it. And at the end of that episode, A Song of Ice and Fire.
Guys, it's insane. It's A Song of Ice and Fire. Let me put, so Matt summed it up in three words. My one word is matters. Like, House of the Dragon matters so much. It's A Song of Ice and Fire now. Like, this, I mean, it mattered before, but it matters even more now. This is a change that's so good. It's so, so, so good for the whole thing. Just to pass that along, it's like, wow, that's what he's passing down to his heir. I don't know. I was absolutely blown away by this episode. I loved it. And like you said, Jimmy, the build up this whole way, he's weak. There's all this talk about him being an heir. And then at the end, he's sitting there, he's got Blackfyre. And he's staring him down. He's commanding him to go. And then just, I don't know, the weight and the tension that you could feel in this was just through the roof.
I mean, him holding Blackfyre, and then you have the wielder of Dark Sister staring him down. Dude, Matt Smith, standout of the episode.
Yeah.
Standout. So, crazy.
Guys, I know sometimes I can be a little long-winded, so just bear with me, because there's so much I have to say about this. First and foremost, the single best compliment I can give this, just this single episode, not even what the show's going to be or anything, this felt like an episode of season 3 or season 4 of Game of Thrones. I mean, just viewing it as a standalone piece of content. This, I mean, the way... And you have the advantage of doing that because, you know, we know what the Iron Throne is. We know all of those things. You know, so I think, like, it's hard to even try to compare this to the Game of Thrones pilot because it has to introduce us to the entire world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously this benefits from that. I mean, this felt like a peak episode of Game of Thrones. I mean, this felt like we were right back there, right watching, like, season 3 or season 4. Like, the little just political banter back and forth and the eyes between Daemon and Otto Hightower as they're sitting, you know, on the council and, you know, talking about your wife, you know, all of the little Game of Thrones being played was back. And the total standout for me, the man who deserves all the credit, freaking Ramin Djawadi, the music was so amazing.
Bro, the final scene.
Yeah, that song they released a few days ago, and it was called The Prince That Was Promised. And I was like, why is there a song called The Prince That Was Promised? And then they're tying it into the Song of Ice and Fire. And we talked about this. This was a potential leak. Spoiler, George has kind of mentioned stuff in the past. But when Rhaenyra flies up for the first time and you can see her, right? That theme is the exact same theme. Go back to season 8, and it's used with Dany a lot, but go watch season 8. I think it's episode 1 where John and Danny are flying and you get a shot of them on both the dragons coming in, and it's the exact, like, point for point the same. It was one of those things we talked about with, like, trying to even compare this to, say, Star Wars, where we were saying, like, you know, do you go an entirely different route for the music? Do you do something kind of similar? And I think he found the perfect ground of, again, like Star Wars, I think, is a great example where Star Wars, the music is all the same. And so everything feels the same, and everything, you feel like you're right back in, and everything, you know, like there's some motifs and that are different in, like, say, the prequels. But it still has that same type of a feel as, like, the droid army, for example, sort of feels like the Imperial March. It's not, but it has that same type of feel. And it's John Williams who did the music. So here, you know, he took a lot of the themes that he created, and he just expands on them. So it feels like we're back.
It's lineage.
And it feels new. Yeah. And it feels like it's older. It was just, I mean, perfect. Like, the score for this episode could not have been better. I mean, not have been better.
Not only that, but the look and the feel of the episode, I felt like this was truly Westeros 170 years ago. Like, Game of Thrones feels ancient and old, right? But, like, this felt older. Mm-hmm. King's Landing looked different, guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't as, like, done up. It was a little bit more rudimentary. I just felt, I felt like I was home.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to say that it also, it, you know, you go back in time and it feels like there's not as much, I don't know, like embellishment, but at the same time, it's closer to its creation at the same time. You know what I mean? Like simpler and sleek, but, you know, because again, we're going back closer to when it was. I mean, obviously improvements have been made, but it just felt really good. Like Matt said, you're stepping right back into Game of Thrones, not missing a beat in terms of, that's what they said in the promo, is that they were taking the best from Game of Thrones, which includes the music, the costuming, the sets, all that stuff. And it's sick.
The embroidery on all of the costumes is
the helm.
So good. I mean, not that Game of Thrones obviously had great costuming and everything. You know, it got a lot better in, like, season 3, you know, compared to season 1. But again, it was launching an entire new show. But, you know, and by the end, all the costuming in Game of Thrones looked great. But this just feels bigger and better. And, you know, it's been 5 years. And if you just even think about some of the technology that, like, has in movies and everything that has just come about, like the volume in Star Wars, the way they filmed The Mandalorian, they said, I've read a lot of stuff that they use, you know, similar type, that they use that same, a lot of that same technology and all that stuff. It's like, you can just see it. I mean, it's just, it's like Game of Thrones looked great, but this just looks so much.
Yeah.
Like, it just looks so good.
So the reason I didn't do a live watch along with you guys, because I just bought a new TV. So it's a 65 inch OLED LG G2. This thing is like,
they're so good.
Yeah. It's literally so, like, good in my wall. And
I almost made it. I was at Costco yesterday and they had it, like, right when you walk in, and I was like,
bro, This looked amazing in HDR 4K. I mean, it looked ridiculously good. And, dude, what you were saying about score, like when she's putting on her hairdress, I mean, everything was building. That's the thing. It didn't feel forced, and it didn't feel like some weird cousin. Like, it literally does feel in-universe. Like, it fits. That is what television can do. Like, that's prime TV. Like, that is actually, like, premium television right there.
Yeah, comment here from, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
Jay. That's my boy, Jay.
Oh, Jay. Yeah, he says, I have the same TV. Looked fucking epic.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was interesting, too, when I was watching, say, the scene where Daemon is talking to Viserys in the throne room, right? And you just think about all the times we've seen that throne room, right, in Game of Thrones, and it's always usually packed and everything. But here, there's like boxes lying around, and yeah, it's just so interesting seeing a lot of the same places that we've seen before, but in this new thing. I mean, the episode was a 10 out of 10 for me. I mean, this would have been one of the best episodes of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think we still need, like, we'll have bigger payoffs, and like, we have so much craziness to come, but like, setting out to do what it's doing, this is better than the first episode of Game of Thrones by a lot.
Oh, yeah. Way.
What was the painting in the background? I see people keep saying this. I did not. I'm gonna watch it again.
I did not notice
before
that.
I make my review video later this week, but like, I mean, my mind was just racing.
I mean, guys, it's, you can't even, I'm trying to go back and do a click through, and thank God I didn't stop the stream when I was going through, because it is crashing. I mean, it's crashing on me right now as I try to go back and do a little click through to find that picture. Want to mention real quickly too, just the tension, the way that they kind of did those moments, the small council is debating what to do with Daemon, and we're locked in on that conversation. And then they gently cut to Daemon listening. And I was like, it stops you for a second. Oh, they're hearing this. You're like, whoa. And you know something, right, that the other characters at the table don't quite know. And it just, that kind of stuff is brilliant. That's good. That's good storytelling. And they did it multiple times. So,
yeah. You know, this episode too also felt like, just if you think about just everything that was in it, it almost felt like, and it's great as a pilot for being this, it almost felt like a showcase of like all of the best stuff that existed in Game of Thrones. Right. Like, we got a little bit of the political banter back and forth. We got, you know, there was some of the, hey, stuff that's really hard to watch and that really grips you. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, this is like crazy.
Even the battle.
The fighting scenes were amazing. And then it ends with like the big prophecy, Song of Ice and Fire. It felt like, hey, this is a showcase of what this show is going to be and what Game of Thrones is, had you never seen the original.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, guys, can I just say, so like, as you go, people who were kind of doubting, you know, they were wondering what's this going to be about or whatever, they're coming in now saying like, all right, I'm impressed. I feel like from the get go, you're like, wow, this is intense. There's battles, there's tourneys, there's whatever. You got to the end of this and it matters. So like, that secret being passed down, I mean, again, the episode without it is phenomenal. If that wasn't done, it would be just, again, a 10 out of 10. This surpasses a 10 out of 10 when you call a Song of Ice and Fire and you go to that next level. Yeah. We're on a different level here, Phil. Like a level we didn't expect, honestly. It's very
obvious, even in episode one, of that George Martin is way more involved in this than he was in Game of Thrones.
Right. And let's
like way more.
Because the attention here, okay, you could have just had Daemon say, when asked, did you say it? And does he answer, fellas? Did we actually see him? Did we actually hear him say it? No, but there were three witnesses, right, who came forward. Did we ever hear him confirm it? No, I mean, not necessarily,
and,
right?
Yeah, and that's kind of like that. We're playing with the ambiguous nature of Fire and Blood in that way. And like, maybe it won't even matter if he ever said, we're never going to get the answer, right?
No, never.
But like, that is just a kind of like a subtle nod to what this whole story is predicated on, which is conflicting reports. You know, it's little things like that are nods to the source material that I really get behind. And like, even the like whenever they're kind of setting up the episode from the cold open, like that worked for me so much. And like, I feel like so many other shows have done this, like this kind of cold open with the narration over Lord of the Rings movies come to mind. Right. Mm-hmm. And it just fit so well.
Yeah. No, yeah. The cold open was actually really good. That was a good way to kind of set the scene for everything, to add in some history. King Jaehaerys, tell us what's been going on. The fact that they brought up Maegor the Cruel and stuff like that, like they're alluding to not too far in, you know, back
from
and,
that
and
point.
They call it, they right. said Daemon was good, it was Maegor. Maybe worse.
Whoa.
Maybe worse. It's like, man. Listen, guys, back off Matt Smith. We got to see Matt Smith clap cheeks. Like, let's guys.
Wow.
I mean, come on. He clapped cheeks.
I will say the Emmys, or as they were known in the, you know, 2010s, the Game of Thrones Invitational, is basically, it's kind of like, you know, Alabama in the national championship. It's like pretty much the Alabama Invitational they get in every year. It's pretty much going to be that again. It was kind of like, I hope you guys enjoyed that little 5-year pause. But the game, the now House of Dragons Invitational has begun at the Emmys, because this show is going to just clean house.
Yeah.
Yeah. HBO's got a couple heavy hitters there, man. I mean, this is why I trust HBO. This is why I love HBO. They just do it different. And, you know, we've been seeing a lot of people, you know, point to other shows like, can this be the next thing? I'm going to be honest. Like, 1 and 2, it reminds me of when Michael Jordan played in the NBA. It's like, dude, Shaq was really good and he was the second best player. And then Michael Jordan was like here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is Nobody what it is. Yeah. And I'm not trying to hate on other shows. I'm just saying that there's levels to this shit. That's
yeah, this is the royal airness. This is the, you know, that commands the skies here, right? Just like old Jordan did back in the day. So I'm with you, man. Like, and Matt's right. Like, this is going to come back and win tons of awards. Whether it's for, I mean, visuals, the costuming, the acting, all sorts.
The
I mean, the
score
music,
is like, everything. Yeah, it's yeah. so good.
It's just phenomenal.
Okay, let's dive into a little bit of So we've talked. Okay, now that we've talked just a little bit about, like, just, you know, impressions, like, okay, it's the show, let's dive into some of the nitty-gritty as like A Song of Ice and Fire lore and, you know, theorists here, because there was a lot of stuff we got to see, because Fire and Blood and A World of Ice and Fire, and just sort of like what's talked about in the histories of this era, the Dance of the Dragons, is really open for interpretation. It's kind of just a broad outline, you know, like, say, Emma Arryn's death. All that's really said is that she died during childbirth and that her son died the next day. But now, you know, on one hand, you could say they're changing it, but with George Martin so involved, I'm thinking this is actually a little more of like his plan for the way of what really happened. So, you know, what do we think about Viserys now that he... Another, was a little more involved with it, man.
Another Targaryen just being deceived by dragon dreams, right? Like,
yeah,
he says, you know, I've seen the dream as clear as day. It was realer than life. And it's right. like, well, you were right, kind of. And isn't that just kind of prophecy in general in the Song of Ice and Fire world? Is like, yeah, you were almost there. Like, you almost got it, but it had a whole different meaning. And dragon dreams, you know, even in Dunk and Egg, we see them, how they are misinterpreted, and they can kind of even be allegory for power and struggle. So I just feel like Viserys, and maybe they could have driven it home a little bit more, but they kept it pretty subtle. They kept it pretty subtle with Viserys in his dreams. They mentioned, I think, twice, and then you see him make that decision. That was awful. Patty Constantine broke my heart. Like, goddamn.
Yeah.
The king better take care of that Merth.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Oh, my. Yeah, that was again, attention to detail in terms
He's getting cut up by the throne. Yeah.
And Rhaenyra
and the throne like that looks sweet, too.
Yes, and I was wondering how it would look on camera, like in a shot. The back is even bigger. Like, that's the thing I didn't act, because, you know, everyone pays attention to the steps and whatnot. But the back is actually bigger. And I'm like, man, that looks so
good. So clearly, when Robert Baratheon got it, he's like, get this out of here.
Like, yeah, he's trying to get nicked up left and right. I'm sick of this, all the cuts and stuff.
Nah,
yeah.
We're not doing this anymore. Fix it.
They had to get the seat stretcher, you know?
The seat stretcher. Oh, boy.
You know, Jay said this in the chat, and I agree. He said, I honestly love the change of Rhaenyra and Allison friendship so far, loving the changes. And I agree. I think them being friends is way better. Way, way, way better.
Yeah, because it tears you apart. I mean, this is like, there's way more emotion to this. I mean, as Matt was even saying with Emma Arryn, all these changes or whatever, and as Jimmy pointed out and Jay there, it's like there's a emotion behind it a lot more, instead of this one line in the page that she died, or that they, you know, knew each other when they were young or something. It's, we're now seeing all this stuff, and we're seeing how close they were, and that's going to tear tear them apart. They went through this emotional sort of, you know, like event together. And here she is getting passed on this great secret.
And Allison getting passed to Viserys' bedchamber after hours.
Yeah,
wow. You know, and that was kind of interesting. And I liked, and as and I said,
or the realm, by the way,
as and I said this a little bit during the when we were watching, Jimmy, so I don't, you didn't hear us say it, but it almost feels like, and I'm glad they're kind of going this way, is at least in episode one, it felt a little bit more like Otto wasn't necessarily trying to, he wasn't really playing the game like to for him to get more power. He was more so just kind of playing to get like to get Daemon out of power. It was like it was more like he was like, you know, playing just being like, I don't like Daemon. Like I need to get him out. So it wasn't like, oh, I want to marry this, my daughter off so that I'm now more in charge. It feels like he's just like, well, he's like, I just hate Daemon.
I feel like there's layers to it, right? Because Daemon's the immediate threat to his influence. So now that Daemon's sent away, we are now going to see Otto Hightower start to scheme. I think we're going to see his truer intentions now.
Right.
And I mean, sending Alicent, you know, she's biting her nails, nervous.
Man,
that was rough.
They played that up. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, her nails, did you see at the tourney when it cut and her nails were bleeding?
Bleeding. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What a detail.
Yeah. Yeah. So you bring up a really good point about Daemon. So at the end, right, Daemon actually goes up and tells him some truth. But at the same point in time, what we saw was also, I mean, they're both kind of right in that, like, Daemon's crazy, but at the same time, Daemon's like, you have enemies all around you. They think you're weak, and I'm really trying to protect you from yourself. I mean, but it's just, there's bits of truth in everything that everybody's saying around the table, which is Game of Thrones. You know, there's a little bit, it's like, who do I believe? Who do I trust? I mean, they're very persuasive. When all the different members at the council are very persuasive, you're like, I'm this is tough. It's a tough call. Yeah. So
yes,
somebody left a very good comment during the live stream and said that they felt like, and at least maybe they're just talking about what we see in the show, that Daemon is kind of like half Ramsay, half Jaime Lannister. And I was like, I think for people who only watch Game of Thrones, I think that is probably a pretty good sort of comparison. Kind of just for like if you watch Game of Thrones, you don't know anything about the books, and you're like, I think that is a good comparison.
Yeah. And I like that people are pointing out that, you know, Maesters come from Old Town, which is where Otto comes from, right? And then Maester Mellos is there. And it's like, also, what about the bonnets? Did you guys like the Maester bonnets?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Dude, you know who, I will say this, you know who else I thought looked freaking awesome? Corlys Velaryon.
Oh, he did.
He's gonna. I think House Velaryon is gonna be so sick. I think they're gonna be awesome.
I think the casting of this show is so good, and I mean, obviously, we know the original show also did a great job, but like to hit it out of the park again with the casting, it's awesome. It's really great.
I'm still so shocked that it's like Millie Alcox, I think is her name, who plays the young Rhaenyra, and then it'll be Emma Darcy later, and then I don't know the young Allison's name just off the top of my head, but then Olivia Cooke. Again, we've talked about this. Man, they look just like them. Like like the older versions, which is so crazy. Just so crazy to see. Yeah, the episode just visually was so stunning.
How did you guys feel about the dragons CGI? I see a couple people in chat saying they didn't care about the CGI. I'm not a big CGI snob. Like, I don't really care.
I am a big CGI snob. I don't know. I didn't have any issues with it. I'm wondering if some people, because a lot of people were having technical issues. And so sometimes I'll notice it, like when I was watching Wheel of Time, I remember I was having connecting issues. And so I was kind of like, wow, the CGI looks like really bad. Cause that show, like the CGI wasn't as great. Even like when I was able to watch it next day in a pure stream, the CGI still wasn't like that good. But when you're also maybe having some buffering issues, it can really make CGI look bad.
Yeah. I mean, there's times where I can obviously tell it's a CGI dragon because, spoiler, dragons don't exist in real life. But like Daemon petting it, it knocking his hair back, these type of like the really close up looked really good, I thought. And I actually love the variance in the dragons. Like, I like the fact that, you know, like the worm actually has like a longer neck. Like, that makes sense. And we kind of talked about it leading up to the show, but even the scene with the saddle, right? Jacaerys. You know, just little details like that I really enjoyed. So I don't necessarily know much about CGI. I just know that I never felt like meh, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Well, certainly compared to what's going on at like Disney with Marvel and Star Wars right now, where the CGI is bad.
Yeah, it could have went a lot worse because apparently CGI is super backed up since COVID. Those studios are still struggling. So
yeah,
I thought it was good.
I thought the CGI looked great too. I'm gonna pull up a picture of just episode one of Game of Thrones to show some people just for comparison, like what it looked like compared to even just the rest of the series, just so I can pull this up. So it'll be funny.
Yeah. Guys, just want to point out a couple things here. So I'm just kind of trying to scrub back through the episode, and I forgot about, because it's early on, the Weirwood tree that they're in front of.
Yes.
Right. So I won't be surprised whatsoever if they pick very important moments to play out or dialogue in front of that tree. And it'll just be a part of the story. But there's a witness, you know what I mean? And I just felt like that was kind of cool. Now in this scene, it was really nothing. It was really just them, the friendship, them kind of talking about, what was it? I think Dorne and Nymeria and stuff like that. So, but I feel like going forward, you're going to have important moments said there that we're going to tie into Weirwood Network. Who knows? You know what I mean? I was like, the fact that it was there, I was just like, that's just another another layer. So,
yeah, it definitely seems like, you know, we're talking about awards and stuff because we need the general audience to love this, right? But
look at that beach blonde Tyrion hair in episode one. Then of course it got much better as it went on. But yeah, just in trying to like remember, oh yeah, what did Game of Thrones episode one look like? It looked a whole lot different than the rest of the series.
It sure did.
Right.
I think we're gonna get, you know, obviously the Emmy winning episodes and everything, but it feels like you said, Matt, it feels very George inspired in the fact that there are things that are just going to appease us, the diehards, right, for A Song of Ice and Fire. And I'm here for it.
And like, we can talk about it because we haven't talked about it with you, Jimmy, even though you were actually the one who initially brought it up to us, and I did give you credit in all those videos, just so you know. And I
thank you
the whole Long Night business, and I think that it's so cool that this thing will get lost during the dance without trying to spoil what happens. I think that's a great thing for it to happen because the next set of Targaryens are the ones who start to get rid of dragons. And if they had any idea about what this potential threat is that could come, there's no way they would get rid of dragons.
Yeah, I mean, we know that this is like massive implications on the lore, right? Like this is about as big as it gets whenever you talk about the like original reason Aegon came. I like the fact that when they revealed it, it's still pretty ambiguous. Like he knows something's coming in the darkness, but it isn't like, hey, this is going to happen. I have to have this, this, and this. He has pieces, just like all the other dragon dreams, just like Viserys did. And this is all kind of like tying together, right? Like you've already seen one dream fall apart and be misinterpreted. And now we're talking about this dream that we're passing down generations to generations to generations. Like, how is it being confused? How is it being misconstrued? And what is eventually going to be the result where this secret has been forgotten? Also, who wrote it down? That Rhaegar picked it up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He finds it somehow later.
Yeah. I see some people online that are like, this ruins everything. This is a retcon. If you go back and read the books, no, it's not. It's absolutely not. It's simply not. Like 15 years probably it's been around in the books. If you go and really think about like the things that are said, things that happen, Aemon's dreams, where he said that we always thought it would be a boy. We always thought it would be a boy, right? And then you have the fact that Rhaegar just went in and picked up a scroll and all of a sudden he wants to play warrior. Like you can't accept that for face value in this type of series, right? Like there's a purpose behind it all. So I think that there's a lot of, you know, mystery around some of the decisions that Aegon made, but I do believe that there is a lot of justification for all of it. So I'm really excited about this. And, you know, I'm a book reader first. Like I put the books above the show in my head, but I can't say that I wasn't super stoked in those last 10 minutes. Like,
well,
that's straight from George. Yeah.
It's straight from George. And it's like the idea he, I don't know. You're led to believe Viserys throughout this first episode is weak, right? Mm-hmm. Except for he is holding on to something that is like only he can pass on to the heir. It's so important. He so matters. And this episode and this whole series matters and ties into Game of Thrones. Like, that's the whole tie-in. That is the whole like tie-in for the whole thing from Game of Thrones to House of the Dragon matters. Now, it's not just some prequel or whatever. It's like, no, there will be a Targaryen that needs to sit on the throne. We will need to be united one day to face that threat. Darkness will ride on the winds, right? Out of the north. And, and like, you know, we need a Targaryen there to face that threat. And that is passed down to who? Rhaenyra. Not Daemon, not anyone else. It's Rhaenyra. And he, all of a sudden, he stops the playing. He stops the tournament. He stops messing around. He says, it's time to get serious. I need an heir. I'm done with this. And I, like, he goes back to the dreams. He goes back to his, like, their roots, their blood. Like what, why the Conqueror came here? And sort of like, I don't know. He just brings an intensity to this that was not there from him. He's kind of laughing. Like Matt said in the episode, he wants everybody to kind of get along, et cetera, playing peacemaker. But, and call him weak, but he does some pretty awesome things here and says, I'm at least going to pass this on to my heir and make sure that this is set up the right way. Now, everyone plotting around him, Daemon in the Hightower says, we're going to see the loss of the secret. But that right there made everything matter. And it was just the best move I've ever seen. I think it's just the best way to tie this in. And that's a George move.
It's a great tie-in without being like fan service-y, in my opinion. It brings continuity to both shows, which is really important, and still has us asking really important questions about the books. It's a win on every side for me.
Yep.
I really believe so. Now, here's something I want to bring to the table. Yep. And this is, you know, I had a friend who messaged me and told me to bring this up. So when we think about Aegon the Conqueror now, and you think about this really interesting situation now that he has had this dream, do you think the letter that was sent from Dorne has any implication into this? Remember the letter sent to Aegon that got him to stop trying to conquer? And we never know what that letter says.
Right, right. Because Rhaenys.
Does Dorne know something?
Yeah. For sure. Something, right? What is it? I mean, what role do they play?
Hold on a second. Hold on a second. I thought that the whole reason that that Dorne sends the letter was because Rhaenys was there, right? Remember,
we have no idea that this was after all this.
You're right.
They send the letter. We have no idea what it says. Aegon just came out and was like, we're not conquering Dorne. We're done.
Right. Done. He walks away.
And we don't know what the letter says.
We don't know what happened. Like Rhaenys and falls, I'm like, but we don't really necessarily know. Like, I mean, yeah, he, what's, he, what, what's it say? Yeah, he burns it. I think see people in the chat kind of talking about that instantly. Something. So
well, John not sit on the throne, but it was Arya that did it. Although he was touching the dagger, the same dagger that Arya uses.
Dude, the fact that was used to try to assassinate Bran all the way in season one, like, dude, I know everyone's like, oh yeah, but the outcome was stupid. I don't care. Like, I love the journey of the dagger. It's so interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Did we see a clip, Matt, where he puts it in the flame? Mm-hmm. And there's like runes on it or whatever. There's like a secret message. And you kind of feel like that's something super important. And we'll see Alicent with it later, but the king will wear it and he'll pass it down to his heir sort of thing. I mean, that's a pretty big deal. This is not just any dagger. It's the king's dagger with a secret message on it about the White Walkers, I'm presuming. Right. So,
yes. I
mean, so insane.
Only fire can tell the secret that's on that dagger. It's just.
My cat's another daggers downstairs, or I'd see if what the Valyrian glyphs say on it. Because now they're speaking Valyrian in the show, so I can speak Valyrian.
Dude. So good. That was so good. I thought when they came out when they were when she walks into the throne room, first of all, when you see Daemon sitting on that throne, wow. Nice. I was getting chills, just like he's getting off the throne, man.
Like, my wife was like, uh-oh.
So something that actually people are blowing up on Twitter right now. I just wanted to pull up Twitter to see everything. And as I talked about it, and I said during the live stream, I said, you know, one of the most interesting things I thought about this episode was in Game of Thrones, we always saw Daenerys riding on the dragons, and it's like she's about to mess stuff up, and she says Dracarys. But here Rhaenyra is like saying it, and it's like, and it's a somber, like sad way to say, and like everyone is like, that's like the thing, that's like the one thing that everyone is tweeting right now, talking about how like they did, how they just loved it. Overall, Rotten Tomatoes, it's like I think it's 88% fan score, and it's now up to 85% critic score. Twitter seems to be actually pretty, I mean, I'd say like 90% positive.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like, so I muted my phone during it, and I was like, I know, like, we all heard, like, the lead people are like, oh, it's pretty good, but you don't know until the masses hit it. And I was just like, I came away and I was like, I'm gonna like this, and I'm gonna let somebody like change my mind about it. I mean, obviously, I'll listen to good points and stuff, but like, my gut reaction was just like, this works, like, this works for me. It feels I'm back in Westeros.
So I'm just on Twitter, I typed in House of the Dragon, I hit latest, which is just whoever's tweeting, whoever happens to be. Let's see here. I never watched Game of Thrones, but I thought I would give House of the Dragon a try, seeing it was 200 years before Game of Thrones. First episode, not bad. We'll see how it goes. I need more. Episode one is incredible. All I can think about while watching House of the Dragon is, do dragons poop while flying? That would be a very big surprise. Great question. When you're going about your day. I don't know. Great question. Maybe
is it fiery? Wow.
Maybe we'll see. Jousting is strange. Once you get knocked off the horse, you get to change the game to a sword fight. You know, it's like, so right. House of the Dragon started off with a bang. So pumped. So yeah, I mean, it's first episode is fire. Can't wait till next Sunday. Yeah, I mean, it's overwhelmingly positive.
There was a piece of the tournament, right, where we're seeing these people commit murder, and Rhaenys is talking to Corlys, and she's like, you know, these people haven't seen a good war. Maegor has been dead for 70 years. And it was like cutting back to Viserys in the birth scene, which was very disturbing. And then you cut to Allison's nails, and everyone's face is a little bit tense, but you can tell the people in the stands are kind of like, yeah, kill him. And it's like this underlying like buildup, like a pressure cooker is coming into King's Landing and obviously Westeros as a whole. And like, you can just feel the tension building. I thought that that was the best. Well, I had to really think about it, but that was one of the scenes that really kind of was provocative to me and stood out.
I loved also that it opened with a sort of like 172 years before, not Robert's Rebellion, not 172 years before Game of Thrones, 172 years before Daenerys Targaryen.
Yeah.
Like, so sick. Like, just even setting the tone. Like, no. We're not talking about anything that happened in Game of Thrones. We're talking about specifically like Daenerys.
Right. Yeah. No, that was sick. I mean, the connected tie in there is huge. And that's the big deal. She's the character that in the book series we're rooting for. She's this whole arc over in Essos, comes back, gonna be completely different in the books, but then everyone's rooting for her. She is what's needed at the end. And so then these are her ancestors. This is how this started. She's the princess that was promised, right? As Aemon says. And so we see that here in, as Matt said, with the title of that song, as Rhaenyra is being named the heir. It's just, it's everything to pass on that secret. Saw a comment in here, by the way, about the Stark. So we know, like, but not to jump way ahead here, but probably after this episode at some point, we will speculate about this very topic and the dagger and passing on the secret more because of Torrhen Stark and what will happen later on, and how maybe the Starks get involved in some of that, the lost message or a part of it or something, you know what I mean? Because they sort of step in there at some point and are, you know, hugely important. So
yeah, I did love the way, because we'd seen the trailer, which was, I think it was the first trailer where it showed some of that scene. Of them all swearing their oath to Rhaenyra. And one of the names you hear is Craegan Stark. But I love that they pinned it back and forth with like him talking about the White Walkers and winter will come and all this stuff. And then it's like, then it cuts to, you know, Craegan Stark and all this stuff. Oh, so sick. Or not Craegan Stark, but Rickard Stark. Right. Yeah. Craegan Stark will be a thing later for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I thought Harrenhal, people are talking about the sets, you know, in the places we went. Harrenhal gave me chills.
Oh, it was good, wasn't it?
Gave me chills, man.
Yeah, people were being melted down and stuff like that, and starting there. They're bringing the chest in, and you've got, I actually think, you know, Jimmy mentioned it earlier, Rhaenys. Who was narrating the beginning of, what? No, that was that, that was right. That was,
yeah. I think it's Emma Darcy, I think, who's narrating, who will play older Rhaenyra,
Right, okay, yeah. But yeah, that was intense, just the look between those two and her and Viserys and so some of the mocking that's going on. It's just a little, it's just a little bit, but it's enough to sort of say, who's side are you on? Corlys is hard to kind of read. I mean...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's saying Daemon, and then he's also saying my wife should be, and they're like, you're just said that you were for Daemon.
Exactly, he's sort of...
he's just saying, hey, man.
He's a also snake. He's a sea snake.
Rainey's the queen who never was, dude. Such a good cast. I mean, just good.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Let's see. I'm gonna scrape through. So to start this whole thing up. So you remember the court when they're walking through? Is in Matt, Matt? We talked about this in the trailer breakdown where Cersei's at, like that open sort of keep or whatever. That's the same spot, right? I mean, it's the same spot where she's at and everything. Yeah. So stuff like that, just seeing familiar spots and everything, and it just was so good. Oh, the other thing was the lighting in this. So all of the candle work that they did, which is crazy, the reflections off of the table, everything. When you get a chance to go back and look at the like the lighting, I'm just kind of like you know going back through it, so perfectly done.
Yeah, because a lot of times Game of Thrones was too dark.
Yeah,
to be fair. And like this was dark, but it was still like the lighting was, it was just done better. I mean, that's just, yeah, that's just one of those things where it's like, that's just like whatever. It reminded me a lot actually of, the Batman, which came out earlier this year, which, that movie felt like there was a lot of scenes where you just have like Batman and whoever, and it's almost like being lit by like one single, like light bulb, you know, in the corner. And it was very aesthetic for that movie. And this felt to me like that, like where you just had like the like one little candle. But in Game of Thrones, oftentimes it's just too dark to see sometimes. But this, like, you know, so they're enhancing it somehow. But it was so
when they
so
cut good. To the Red Keep at the beginning of the episode, right before we get our first like look at the council, there was like just a slight lens flare that almost it almost reminded me a little bit of fire. And I'm looking at the Red Keep. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, is that intentional? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you can see the budget in this.
Oh, definitely. There's two things in chat. One, some people are asking about the lesion on the king's back. That's from the Iron Throne cutting him.
Iron Throne cutting him, yeah.
Which is like so on point. But also, someone's asked this, and I'm not sure what was with the balls and the table at the council meeting. And we talked about this when we broke down the trailer. Remember, we're like, what the hell are those balls?
I think it's just I don't know. It's probably some ceremonial thing. And then I don't know.
Like a vote or something, or
I don't remember reading about it in Fire and Blood or anything. So is that something that I've missed?
I don't know. I don't ever remember that.
Yeah, no. It seems like something new where they're gonna cast votes, or they're possibly they're present or something.
Some people have said it's cancer that cut on him, but
yeah, I just remember him in the episode. They said, you know, that it was from the Iron Throne cut,
right?
So yeah. I don't know.
Well, the big question with that cut is that like. Is that because, you know, people have speculated back in the day, we didn't answer the question whether or not Alicent has anything to do with his death later on, or is it just going to be this cut, or does she hasten it a little bit for whatever reason?
So yeah, Vulture is reporting that there will be an opening sequence next week. I talked about this. Wheel of Time did the exact same thing. Actually, a lot of shows, to be fair, do on their pilot episode where they just have sort of like a title card. They don't do like the full intro. But HBO shows are kind of known for their very, like, I don't know, not over the top, but they take a lot of pride in their opening title sequences. Like The Sopranos is a very good one. Deadwood had a very good one. Obviously, Game of Thrones. Peacemakers was great earlier this year. I mean, what will it be? I think it's going to be, I hope, in all honesty, I hope it's just the same with like different music. If you want to do like a slightly different oriented, whatever, I hope it's kind of just like the Game of Thrones thing. Cause then to me, it's like you're building it like Star Wars, where it always starts off, you know, a long time ago, and in a galaxy far, far away, Star Trek has its kind of similar thing. Trying to think of some other shows that where they kind of do that, where they use like a very similar opening for multiple things. But that's just the way I would go. But Wheel of Time actually had a pretty cool intro scene that felt kind of like Game of Thrones, to be honest. And it'll probably be something like that.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. Yeah, I wonder what it'll sound like. I wonder what it'll feel like. But I think it'll probably be very close to the original theme. It's kind of like they always changed up the Wire's intro song every season. They always did like a different type of genre for the opening song, and that was always really cool. So
The Sopranos doesn't change, does it? I'm in season two currently.
I don't believe it.
Deadwood, I know, did not change theirs.
Ah, people are saying the balls are obsidian dragon glass. Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is pretty neat. They're talking about like possible ways to identify yourself, and they're worried about assassins, right? If they're faceless men or something different like that. And that's kind of cool because Matt's brought up the idea that we might see a faceless man, or there's some wild card that we haven't yet seen that would involve a that guild, which would be, I think, really cool. You know,
just a second. Do you guys realize we saw Jaehaerys on our screens today?
I know.
Like, God damn.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Like, yeah. We are so fortunate to have this kind of budget. Like, I don't know. You know, after season 8, there was a lot of speculation. We'll never see this thing again. The franchise, all this stuff. And then, like, you get this first episode, and it just worked. And, I just feel really lucky.
I think you're right. The fact that we got that, because that was our big question coming in, is sort of like, how are they going to, like, give us context and tie us back to some of Aegon the Conqueror, and then explain what, like, the state of the realm and then where we're going. They did a great job of not doing too much. I mean, that opening sort of dialogue, and then seeing the Council of 101 AC, and then talking about the secret at the end. It's everything. Like, it was so well, like, I think you said, Jimmy, when you first started, like, it wasn't overdone. Nothing felt overdone. It was just very natural. Everything just felt really smooth and good. Yeah. And
it did feel serious. Like, this felt like serious. And that's, Matt, I like when you said, you know, this felt like an episode kind of out of season 3 and 4, where, like, we're in it, right? I wonder where some of the comedic balance will come. I don't want them to marfle it up too much, where, you know, everything's got to be a wink and a you know, I don't want that. I think Daemon had a little bit of light. Like, he had some light lines, which also really helps flesh out Daemon as a character, because he's not just he's not Maegor, actually. So, like, that's a big distinction. No. And I think after episode 1, even a new viewer could see, well, this guy's not all bad. Like, he clearly has some depth to him. And he loves his brother. I believe that as well. So I wonder who will provide some of the comedic relief. And I hope that they don't lean too much into it. You know, like I said, kind of like Marvel does that a lot, right? It's like the big moment, and then there's one guy making an offhand comment. I hope they kind of stay away from that. They did that a lot in later seasons too. But I wonder, it just, this first episode felt so, so serious.
Oh, so good. This episode, just the overall pacing and everything in this episode, to me, was like perfect. I mean, I'm at a 10 out of 10 on this episode, because I thought, as a pilot, it came in and did exactly what it needed to do. It showed you what the series is going to be. It gave you, like, similarity. This is why this show is similar to Game of Thrones. And just on its own, it was just a great episode. It did so many comments. It did feel like a movie. You can feel the budget. And they've said that the budget for HBO is only going to get bigger. Like, that's the crazy thing, is this was actually, because I know I've talked about the whole merger and the Warner, you know, the business side of everything. But, you know, this was like the final part of HBO being owned by AT&T, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel, regardless, I know it feels like they're pulling a Band-Aid off by canceling all this other stuff. But it's like they're not touching HBO, like, with Discovery Channel. They're like, that's the one thing that's working. If anything, we're doubling down. So, whatever we're getting right now, season 2's budget is going to be that much bigger. Like, that's crazy.
I think I underestimated also the reach of this show. I knew it was going to be a success. Like, and I said it'll probably never, you know, reach those same levels of Game of Thrones reach as far as the zeitgeist goes, right? Mm-hmm. Because, like, that's a different thing other than just winning Emmys and stuff. Like, Succession is a phenomenal show, and it still hasn't captured the zeitgeist. I was wrong. If you look at the Twitter impressions, and not just Twitter, but YouTube, any social site that kind of tracks these metrics, this episode is destroying records.
Yeah.
You know, even before it was out, it already had as many ratings as the last episode of Succession, which people say is the best, you know, and I'm not saying one's better than the other. I don't want to make it all tribal, but I'm just saying I did not realize how big this is potentially going to be.
And this will take me to, as you're going to have to help me with this. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
This will take me to the Mummakill in the room. Is that how you pronounce it?
Mummakill.
Yeah. The elephants in Lord of the Rings. Is that how elephant in the room? Right.
Yeah.
Because a narrative that will begin next week, you know, next week at least, is going to be, just because of timing and everything, is this versus Rings of Power.
Hmm. Right. Right.
I mean, that narrative will begin next week when Rings of Power comes out. So, I mean, now that we've seen House of the Dragon, What are we thinking a little bit here?
I mean, kind of. Go ahead, Ez. Actually, you're taking the game.
No, I just want to say. I mean, I think it's gonna be really, really interesting. Couple things. All right, here we go. Let's dive down this, because what this did. Jimmy said something interesting about the stakes of this the show and just the reach, right? I think you said just in terms of how people are. They went back in. Everybody who was there, that audience that was there at that season 8, went back and said, let's check this thing out. And they all went, wow, 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 wow. And then they went, oh my God, this actually matters and is tying into the main series. There's like a secret. They mentioned like the freaking Night King.
You know, Jimmy, every holiday season, I find myself with a dilemma. At my wife's extended family Christmas, we do a white elephant gift, and I never know what to get.
Well, Matt, spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list. All in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling.
Yeah, they scour the globe for original handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their website. Things like chocolate from around the world, handcrafted cribbage boards, wine glasses, bourbon sets, just about anything you want to find that would be a unique or uncommon gift they have in their selection.
And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season.
Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts that you can personalize.
And from holiday host to hostess gift to the coolest finds for kids to hits for everyone from book lovers to diehard sports fans, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, not the same old selections you can find just anywhere.
And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee. That's uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF, Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF, Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
I mean, it's all like tying to that. That's something I didn't expect. I didn't see that. And just even as somebody who was going to go watch it anyways. So that's huge. It's set. It's locked in. Now, in Rings of Power, they're doing stuff right now also that is movie level. Everyone's saying this is like a movie. Rings of Power is also going to bring a heavy hammer up in here. The other thing that's going on there, I mean, I very well believe that the stranger that we see in that is like either Saruman, Glorfindel, one of the wizards. So you're going to see again, that tie back to why does this matter? The Rings of Power. You're going to see Sauron. You're seeing things that matter later on. So very similar to House of the Dragon, having that tie back to Game of Thrones, you're going to have Rings of Power tying into like, you might see a good wizard like Saruman. Saruman might actually be the guy that we're following in Rings of Power, who's actually helping people fight off Sauron. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that they're bringing to the table and saying, watch us. Like Galadriel is the main character in that. So it is going to be like a couple of titans up in here just right. going at it, which is awesome. It's bringing everybody to the table. I the other thing that they've done, they're doing next week, like some massive sort of for free. They're posting tickets by noon tomorrow that you can go watch Rings of Power in theaters before it premieres. What's that do? You watch episode one, then you say, got to get Prime, got to see episode two, and so on. Right? They know. I mean, this is. They're pulling everything out, right? I mean, they both have done the red carpet stuff. They've gone crazy. I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's literally just all the award shows is just literally it's either Rings of Power or House of the Dragon. I mean, it's just like this back and forth thing, which is fine, which is great.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, I just think one, we're not going to get a balanced take on it from our good viewers tonight because we're Westeros right. people here. As
oh, right, for sure, okay. For sure. Absolutely.
I am cheering for Rings of Power. I think it has way more questions to answer than this show does, especially with, you know, how people feel about certain lore decisions or whatever. I don't know. We'll have to see. I honestly, like, I don't even know if it's I can't really put any words on it because, like, I just have to see Rings of Power at this point because I knew House of the Dragon was going to be competent. I knew it was going to be a competent show because of the history of it. I was still blown away. And I think that's saying a lot for someone who has an extreme bias and is very optimistic. So I just got to wait and see. I don't know.
See, and that's why tonight's episode for me was so impressive on so many levels that that's why I'm like, it's an absolute 10 out of 10. I would give it like a 50 out of 10 because look at all the, let me just go down the list of everything that this show had going against it. Right. For starters, most sequel or successor shows of any main franchise typically fail. They're very few and far between that even succeed enough to get a handful of seasons, let alone any show that can actually ever be more successful or as successful. I mean, they're very, very, very rare. Go look at almost any sitcom that's ever had a spinoff, like Friends, one of the most successful shows in history. They tried a spinoff with like Joey. Flopped so hard. It's very rare. You know, Star Trek was able to pull it off with Next Generation. Cheers to Frasier, which actually was more successful, but it's pretty rare. I mean, it's very rare to have any sort of sequel show ever succeed at all.
Yeah.
Let alone something that in theory could be better. So you have that just going up against it in the first place. Then of course you have all of the hangup of season 8. People were like, I'm so done with this franchise, all this other stuff. So now you add that to the mix where like, no, this show has to be good. If you want to turn Westeros into a Star Wars or Marvel or DC Harry Potter like franchise, it has to not only do well on its own, it has to do well in spite of some hangups of the final thing. Then you add in the fact that like, this is the new baby of like a multi-billion dollar, you know, exchange from AT&T to Warner Brothers Discovery, where they're like, hey, we're banking on this being like the whole deal for our company. And then the show is just freaking sick on its own. I mean, and then you have Rings of Power that it's going up against. And like, I'm not even nervous, worried, whatever. Not saying Rings of Power is going to be bad or anything, but it's like just seeing what I saw tonight, like it will, if Rings of Power is the greatest show that's ever existed, this show will still be fine going up against it.
Oh, absolutely. It would be like you said, it has done enough on its own just as a show without all the other stuff going on, all the other hoopla or the baggage or the context to it by itself is just great. And yeah. then it does so good at tying in and wrapping up stuff or just making things matter. It's good on its own.
I'm going to be honest. And I'm just being transparent. I don't really care about Rings of Power. I'll be honest. I've been excited because it's fantasy and that's kind of what I do and whatnot. But I just feel like I'll get to it when I get to it. Right. I'm ready for episode 2 of House of the Dragon. I'm focused here. You know?
Yeah. And I think a lot of people too, here's the thing. I think a lot of people will, what they've done in this very first episode is to say, I don't know. I know there's going to be all this like the battles with dragons and back and forth, the High Towers versus Targaryens and blacks and greens. But we have really just to wrap up the Rings of Power conversation or whatever. It's just a huge question mark for even Tolkien fans, even that fan base. Oh, yeah. They just have no idea what it's going to be. So that by itself is also alluring and very much okay, we got to go sit down and have a watch of this. But as like you say, we already have a world here. Like this actually already fits in with something else we really love. And there's a snow show coming out. Like they've already jumped ahead and said, hey, this is actually going to matter and tie into a ton of different projects. So yeah, it's kind of really got that going for it.
Yeah. I think even still, I would actually give the benefit to regardless, even before this episode even aired, I would give the advantage to Game of Thrones just because, or House of the Dragon here, because Game of Thrones was only, it was 5 years ago, which is crazy to think.
It's only three.
Well, it was 2019. Yeah. So we started in 2017. So sometimes I think about
that. Yeah. I got you.
Yeah. That's why it's kind of that my mind always jumps there. Right. It was 3 years ago. Right.
Right.
But there was a big time jump in between season 8 and season 7 because it took a while to film. So Lord of the Rings, I mean, I guess the Hobbit movies, you know, were a while ago, but the Lord of the Rings movies were even kind of further, you know, away. 20, so
23.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
that's crazy to think about.
Yeah, we old boys, we're old.
And now Rings of Power is going like thousands of years before, as opposed to you know, just a few hundred.
Yeah. it's tough to kind of put it to like how does it matter? How does it fit into like a universe? Also, they're separate, right? They're different. They're produced by Amazon versus New Line, you know,
whereas this is HBO picking up where they left off.
It's all in universe and it all kind of fits and matters and is a different piece of the puzzle. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm super excited for Rings of Power.
I'm excited to see what it is.
But I do get why this is so we can think back in our recent memory and say, I know what's going on here and I know how this ties into that. And it is massive. And I just didn't expect it in episode 1. Guys, they pull Rhaenyra into the Kingsguard, walked up to her chambers and said, your father has summoned you. Right. And they go down. Right. I mean, you have the dragon skull, the candles laid there. And he asks her, hasn't spoken to her, and says, what do you see? Right. And starts talking about power and dragons. Right. And what does it all mean? And he shares this secret that is just so mind blowing, was not anywhere in the text. So that's something new for fans, for book reader, for show watchers, whatever. I just didn't expect. I mean, I know we were talking about it beforehand, but just the way they pulled it off and the fact that they did it the way they did it is just huge. And to see the seriousness with that, you know, Rhaenyra walking in there talking to her father about this is just mind-boggling.
And we saw the Gold Cloaks, you know, not formed like their inception, but we're hearing about the beginning of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys, but
I know it's everything, right? It's all these different factions that are starting up and everything, and it's sort of like the beginning to it all. It's
how much time do we think passes between episode 1 and 2?
That's a good question because we know
because all the reviewers I've watched who are the people who get like the very early screeners. Now they get stuff before like VFX is even finished. Cause it's like, so they get it so far ahead. And they gave out to all of those, like the, you know, people have like a million subscribers. Maybe one day we'll get there. They gave them the first 6 episodes, which is what they felt. They were like, this is what we want you guys to see. And they all said that episode 6 was where like the big time jump happened, where we switch to like Emma Darcy and Olivia Cook. But it's a lot of them actually described the show very similar, and a lot of them said, and we've only obviously seen episode 1, but that it's a slow burn and that it felt very much like Succession was what they, and The Crown was what they described it as.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that sounds like too, though, you know, because I'm thinking about the characters who need to show up, and his, you know, marriage to Alicent and other tourneys that are going to happen, and things that will happen with Damon. Where does he go? Mm-hmm. Dragon Egg, you know, lots of different things that we even saw from the trailer, a dance sequence with Rhaenyra, her
we heard about the Crab King down at the steps. Yeah, we know that fight's coming,
which is cool. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I guess you're right, Matt. We're going to see probably, you know, another five more episodes of Viserys's sort of reign, you know, and what happens during all of that, and really sets the stage, which is good because you have a great actor there and a really, really cool king who's just passed on the secret. And like, then it's almost like we get this episode one, we sort of lose track of it. There's a war at the Stepstones. Rhaenyra is growing older. Alicent is having children. And we're like, oh, wait, but hold on a second. The heir super matter, you know, it gets all kind of muddied. So,
and what's this letter to Old Town Otto wrote? What's that, I know, all about?
Right? Yeah.
What's going on, man? He is scheming. And right now, though, if you weren't in the know, you're like, it doesn't seem like that bad of a guy. He seems like he's really just fighting for the realm. But if you didn't know any better and you're just sort of a straight show watcher, you're like, I don't know, it seems okay. Alicent seems like she's super concerned and says something really nice and touching to the king. So
yeah, and you know, when you're thinking about characters that, like, you know, can be really good for conversations, like Viserys, obviously his decision with his wife, you know, it paints him in two totally different lights from the beginning of the episode to the end of the episode. But I think Damon is so fascinating, and that's why Matt Smith's kind of the standout for me, is like, I'm very curious what the popular opinion of just the general, not even so much us, you know, we're all really deep into this, but like, you know, just like my mom and dad, like, I want to know what they feel about Damon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he a renegade? Are they Team Otto? You know, I'm curious.
Right. And that's what I was hoping it would do, this is that we all start to kind of gravitate towards a person or a faction or whatever. Again, we've read it, us three sitting here and you, a lot of you guys in the chat. Mm-hmm. So we sort of know, I kind of, you know, the bullet points or the outline of where this is going to go. But other people don't, they have no idea. And they're going to be at large rooting for this person or that person. Yeah.
And we here, look. Oh, go ahead, Jimmy.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to bring up just a few more comments I pulled up from Twitter here. So shout out to he's one of my followers, and I follow him. His name's Josh Babcock. Really, I follow him more for sports. He's like a Browns fan. And so we actually disagree on almost everything. He said, watching House of the Dragon felt like watching early seasons of Game of Thrones. I'm not ready to claim we're back, but I really enjoyed episode one. So I even see that, like, somebody who I almost, for whatever reason, it seems like we're just always on the opposite sides of everything, to say that he didn't like it. And then, of course, Matthew Perry just put, you know, head explosion emojis in our little Game of Thrones group chat, and just like, OMFG, cannot believe they did the prophecy thing.
Yeah. Wow, my entire feed is straight up just Westeros. Wow.
Yeah.
It's good. Like, as we said, it's back and it matters. Yeah. And it's just
here's somebody else. Alfie Molinaro is from the guys over at
Rule of the Galaxy.
They're a Star Wars podcast we're friends with, saying it was very good, very promising, but it has a long mountain to climb to overcome the ashes of its predecessor.
I don't know. I kind of feel like in one episode, it's already
I feel climbed. So good about it.
That mountain, air quote, of ash. I'm sure, because really, I guess I would kind of be still like 1 foot in, 1 foot out if it wasn't like, if you didn't add this extra bit in here with this, the passing of this secret, it's still really, really good and would have surmounted any kind of concerns people have. But in one episode, they didn't wait for like four or five to say, let's really kind of stretch it. They said, no, give us one episode and watch us erase everything and all those concerns. They're gone for me. I mean, so.
Oh yeah, definitely gone. And one thing I want to kind of just touch on, and this is like the germ touch, if you will, the secret sauce of his involvement, is that we're going to have fun these next few weeks, right, guys? Like, we're going to come on here, we're going to speculate about what's going to happen, the changes they're going to make and everything. But when this season concludes, we got to get out the pencil, we got to get out the paper, and we got to get back into the books. We got to go back to the Maester study, boys, because the last 10 minutes of this episode have changed the context in which we
read of all of it.
It changed
the whole thing.
And there are breadcrumbs in here, and people are already starting to pull them out. Like I said, Aemon's dreams, Rhaegar finding the scrolls. There's even stuff in Fire and Blood that's worded in a very interesting way. And now when this season's over, it's the gift that keeps on giving. And now theorizing won't be about what kind of croissants are being served at feast. It'll be about the fact that Aegon had a dream.
I often talk about the episodes of Game of Thrones that George wrote, because he wrote four episodes. There's some cool little nuggets in there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what do we say to the God of Death? Not today. That's not in the books, but it is in an episode of Game of Thrones in which George wrote, right? And there's a few other ones if you go look at the episodes he specifically wrote. And it's almost a pain. I feel like I'm almost willing to take that now. It's just can't. Because clearly George is over here saying, no, I think we can do this here. And I think we can do this here. And I think, because now what's to say that that doesn't, what's to say that that, that isn't something that pops up in Winds of Winter? What if, you know, I mean, like,
100%,
I mean,
dude.
I mean, what if in theory he is, because he is right, he is helping write House of the Dragon while he's writing Winds of Winter. And I think that's actually, at least from a writer perspective who's, you know, struggled with it, now you have the opportunity to be like, no, I can add to the story I'm writing by adding stuff back here. Not, I have to finish in order to, like, keep up.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. I mean, the key line is, it's very similar to what the Starks are. So, okay, as Matt said, he's writing the Winds of Winter. And so you're thinking about what's going to happen in the end here. We talked about Rhaegar. We talked about Dany. In this very episode, it's mentioned that a Targaryen needs to sit the Iron Throne. And also we know from the book series that a Stark must always be in Winterfell. And this is a Song of Ice and Fire, two different thrones, Winterfell in the north, and in the south, we have a Targaryen sitting on that throne. And then it's just, there will be something. There will be, whether it is Rhaenyra at the end here placing down in writing or something, a secret in a relic of some kind, possibly maybe a sword hilt or who knows, something, right? Just to kind of pass that on, Rhaegar finds something in the scrolls, in notes or whatever, and rises up and says, now it's time for, we got to prepare. Holy smokes, we almost lost this. Yeah, it just matters, man. And he is going to reveal that. That's something it's almost like he gave them a tidbit that he had been holding back. It doesn't feel like anything that's like fabricated just for the show. It actually feels like that's where he was driving towards, right, Jimmy? So
yeah, and he's mentioned it before in interviews all the way back in like 2015 and 16 for book purposes. So and if you go back and read Aemon's Dreams and stuff, it all makes sense. I mean, I feel like some people are like, whoa, retcon, but it's not the case. Right. And then you have to start wondering, kind of like what Noelle said in chat, like, does this play into Aerys going mad at all? You know, is Dany going to find out the secret in Winds of Winter? Marwyn's going to her with possibly glass candles. Is that glass candle made from the dragon stones that we're seeing that are the balls and the little cups at the council table? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
You know what else is interesting? Great comment here by Kira. And it was George that pitched it to the writer. He was the one who actually pitched this. But now we're going to have to do some investigative digging to see, when did George, which happened first? Did George pitch House of the Dragon before or after Kit Harington pitched him the idea of Snow? Because what was the Game of Thrones? Because we know that there was the Long Night's idea that got scrapped. Then they said it was going to be House of the Dragon, but House of the Dragon didn't get sort of announced or whatever or anything until I think it was 20. It would have been sometime in 2020.
Feels right. Like, as I've been waiting my whole life.
So, right. So was it, did Kit Harington pitch to George the idea first of, hey, I want to do a Snow successor show? Or did this get pitched first? Because that changes a lot of things. Maybe HBO was sitting there saying, hey, maybe Miguel and some of these other guys were saying, hey, maybe we'll just do a Jon Snow sequel.
Well,
or a sequel to Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And then Kit comes to George and says, no, I want to do a Snow sequel. Well, then George says, well, okay, then I think we should, then I think the other show we should do is the Dance of the Dragons.
Shake is saying in chat, he's saying that Gurm pitched first because the pitch was from 2016.
Ooh.
Wait, pitch what? P- pitched
this show.
This show was pitched in 2016.
I believe that too. I do believe that because Fire and Blood came around right around that time.
Well, my only concern with the Snow Show. So this in one episode showed you how much it matters, how much this show. It would have mattered. I'm not saying it wouldn't have, but it matters so much more because of the secrets that are being passed down by the Targaryens. Like, holy smokes. And then you go to the Snow Show and you say, how is that going to matter? It matters, but like beyond the, you know, well, the climax, Matt, is Winterfell, or is it, right? That's right. The whole point. Is that
I know is after seeing this, I guarantee the Snow Show is going to matter. Insane.
I mean, it's gotta be so good.
I'm so in on that.
And I love
the key though has to be that that's the point though. If it's gonna be as good as Matt just said, which I believe that it is as well, it has to matter. And that's the whole point, is that it will. So how though? That's the big question. Our big theorizing going forward is what is that thing that's gonna make it matter to the degree that Matt just said, right? You know, so we kind of gotta think through.
I just love this week to week hype and us just kind of like getting to let loose. And I love when we see new people stopping in. We have Jay Nell. He's on the Facebook feed. He said, no clue who you guys are. I did not read any of the books, and it took 4 seasons for me to like Game of Thrones, but I'm coming to hang out with you guys every Sunday after the show.
Loved this first
episode. That's what it's all about, boys.
That's cool, Jay.
That's cool.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
Let's see. Ryan Connell. George was very kindly involved me in this project merely 4 years ago, September of 18, when he got the call up to the major leagues. Okay. So that show did.
Ryan Condell is the man, by the way.
Mm. Oh, well, he did.
They're in good favor.
Yeah. Wasn't it Ryan? Somebody worked with Kit Harington on whatever his show was, because he has his own production company. We had looked at this.
It could have been Miguel. Let me see.
Yeah, because George said he wasn't ready to like announce those showrunners, right? But they were, that Kit had his own sort of thing, right?
Well, and also as we're talking about this and we're giving people props and stuff, like, let's just remember, like, we had the hunch that the problem was D&D, and we said this show's getting everything other than D&D, so this should be great. And so far, you know, we're only one episode in, but
so far
it's looking good.
Well, I mean, still, hold on. Let me just say this real quick. I know, I don't get me wrong, D&D definitely botched season 8.
Oh, we're not about to go to D&D.
And some of season 7. But, I mean, they did also help create, when they were given the source material, when they had the source material, they did create the greatest show in the history of television.
To quote Stannis Baratheon,
yes,
the good doesn't wash out the bad, and the bad
doesn't. Well, I'm not saying, but I mean, like, I mean.
Oh, no, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah.
But tonight is not their night.
No, right. Tonight is definitely not their night.
And someone said, do you think they watched? They absolutely did not watch.
No,
there's no way.
What?
They gave up on us. They gave up on us. But we're still here.
I put them in the same category that I put people like Rian Johnson and Patty Jenkins, and that they are great at adapting somebody else's written story. Not every director is a good writer, you know, but some people are good directors. Some people are bad at writing, you know, whatever. Some people are good about
writing. I thought the writing was very good this episode, by the way, because that was like the big question, is whether the writing could hold up to what we kind of expect out of a Game of Thrones type show. And then not having a lot of the dialogue, really any, from Fire and Blood, it's like, okay, well, the best lines in Game of Thrones arguably came from George from the books, like directly.
Definitely.
And the fact that he was able to review the script and everything, it was awesome. Also, what about when Damon
just this line here, this is like so ridiculous.
Whatever he called Otto a cunt. Right, I was like, oh my god.
I will say there was a funny comment, Jimmy, because you didn't watch live with us, but when they start going out to the street and they're taking care of, you know, the murderers and whatever, and they go straight Ramsay Bolton on that guy. Somebody was like, because I think that technically was the first nudity we saw. They were like, well, that's not the nudity I was expecting. Oh,
everybody
in the chat was just laughing so hard.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah, not the nudity we wanted, right? So they
nudity we deserved.
Yeah, but the nudity we deserved.
Yeah. Oh, dude, when Damon swings Dark Sister and then the next scene's him throwing the head on the pile.
Oof.
Brutal, man.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely had some fire and blood in this episode. It was cool. I thought the tournament too was really well done, honestly. Like a lot of good energy. Yeah.
All the tournament stuff was the battling and everything was sick. Lady Misery, what'd you guys think of her? She's kind of a new character who we're gonna be seeing who mentioned a lot in the
In the book. She's older. In the book, she's actually a little bit older. I think she's described as almost like creepy looking. So they kind of aged her down, you know, to probably be, you know, more attractive and whatnot for the general viewer. But we'll see. Definitely Shay vibes from her.
Yeah, with a little more mystical power, almost like a blending of like I'm not so sure if we're going to get, because she's supposed to be a little bit more almost like, what do they call her? The Mistress of Whispers or something like that. Like she's supposed to be sort of in on his like secrets and stuff or whatever. So I feel like. Is that right?
Bending his ear a bit because he hates his and this is his quote, bronze bitch, right? Is that what he calls his wife?
Yep.
So yeah, that's the whole idea, is that she is from across the narrow sea and she is kind of bending his ear.
Yeah. Yeah. She has a real mysterious sort of vibe or whatever. And it's gonna be cool. It's gonna be cool to see her by his side. And you know, I think they'll steal like a dragon egg or whatever, and we'll get into all sorts of trouble together before he sort of comes back to, you know, he's gonna have an arc. I mean, he's gonna have this arc where he really, right now we're sort of like, not so sure. He seems sort of rough around the edges, but he's also seemingly looking out for his brother, and then he's gonna go off and do God knows what and come back and raise his crown and say, I'm sorry. You know what I mean? He's going to full circle a little bit here. So yeah, but I think she's cool. She's a really cool, element to the show. So.
Yeah. She could be a wild card too. You know, I'll be curious to see what kind of liberties they take with her character. Like Matt said, that, you know, there's not a ton of text for her.
Right.
So that'll be interesting. We had a question from Umana 1224 said, I don't know if you guys saw my question. Did you guys watch Inside the Episode after the episode ended? I did not, but I will watch
it
tomorrow.
I will watch it when I watch the episode tomorrow, just because we hopped right on to do our live stream. So
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Shauna says the jousting tournament kept me thinking about A Knight's Tale, and I actually did too. And I love them changing the banners and just even the helms being different. You know, that's one thing my wife said. She was next to me and she's just like, you know, all this stuff has so much detail. Like, it's crazy. And she said, Damon's helm, just badass. Right.
Oh, yeah.
If you could only go back in time before season 8 and look at any of the, like, you know, just like, go back and, like, if you could go back in time, right, and type in like Game of Thrones season 8, like, there was all these like pictures. Remember, like, it was like all like, you know, Jon Snow in like Targaryen armor and like all of it like exactly like what Daemon is wearing. And I was like, he's never gonna get this, but it was just like, you know, like fans are out there like, speculating and doing stuff. So
hoping to see it. So they got it right here. I mean, they got right, the real dragon. Yeah.
It looks sweet. And then he gave Rhaenyra the little Valyrian steel necklace, and
yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it seems like they have a really good, you know, relationship, and she's very smart. They pulled that very well. Like they show that she's just, she wants to kind of, you know, fly around, do her thing. She's living in terms of like wanting to be this warrior princess or whatever, but she's very smart and she knows her uncle. She knows exactly who he is and can kind of, you know.
What did you guys think? Because I remember seeing some of the criticism. So some of the criticism going in from people who had screened it earlier was they felt like some of the criticism was people who've seen multiple episodes, like the early screeners, was they felt like they were trying to make Rhaenyra Daenerys essentially, or like there was, did you guys feel that at all? Or,
well, that was one of the things I was worried about with the show is that, I mean, and we're not going to talk about what happens, but like you could definitely draw a lot of parallels between Rhaenyra and Daenerys. And I wonder if it'll give people kind of a flashback and bad feelings. Obviously their arcs aren't identical or anything like that, just so people don't feel like I'm spoiling anything, but I think there's definitely a link there. Like I think, you know, them showing it how many years before Daenerys it actually was, like I think it's without a doubt on purpose that they're trying to relate those two things, but I don't necessarily know if that's a bad thing.
Right. Yeah, no, I think it's great. I also think too, she does, Rhaenyra distinguishes herself just because of all the Targaryens around her, all of her learning, all that kind of stuff. So they're like similar, but yet very different just because of, you know, life situation and where Daenerys is at compared to where she's at. So I don't know. I was super impressed by how, I don't know, just her, just the way even the actress sort of pulls off her facial expressions in terms of looking at her uncle and understanding what her father's up to. And she seems to be very savvy in terms of the political things that are going on. And she's very, very, very young, which is definitely not something Dany had to kind of learn along the way and figured out through experience and through ups and downs or whatever. But she seems to be on it. And I think that's what's going to make her. I think it's what's going to kind of bring, like, Daemon is this rogue prince. I really think like Rhaenyra is going to win that. Not to spoil anything, but as we get further, she's going to have sort of a reign, a kind of a control on him more than maybe was amped up in the book. So
yeah, it was also cool because the trailers definitely made it seem like it was Daemon versus Rhaenyra, and we're all kind of like, wait,
right?
What are they doing here? And then as we got closer, I think we all kind of said, oh, it's a little bit of a bait and switch here, you know, showing off Matt Smith as much as they possibly can because he's like the most notable guy in the show.
Although Patty Considine, man.
Patty Considine won me over.
I'm unfamiliar with him because I think Peaky Blinders is what
he was in The Outsider as well, which was an HBO adaptation. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just unfamiliar with him. So Matt Smith, I know because I've seen in Doctor Who, and then he was in Morbius and
The Crown.
Yeah. But I mean, Matt Smith, I know, is great. But Patty Considine, man, I'm definitely excited to see more of him.
Yeah, absolutely. I was very impressed. Very, very impressed with the whole cast.
Yeah, guys, there is some breaking news here that actress Millie Alcock, who plays Rhaenyra, has been hospitalized seriously after a spinal fracture from carrying the first episode on her back.
Wow.
I will say I thought she was phenomenal.
Crushed it, man.
Emily, Daenerys grew as the show went on, and so did the actor, right? Clark. She got better. Some people still don't think she's great. I actually thought she started to get much better towards the end of the show, but this is not the case here. The lady playing Rhaenyra did a great job.
And it's like kind of bittersweet in a way, because it's like, man, it's like, I'm excited to see Emma Darcy, obviously, as like when you get to older Rhaenyra, but it's like, man, they're just so good. And then they're going to be gone, you know? And it's just like,
Now she's great. She did a great job, and that's kind of fair. I mean, just all of her mannerisms, man. All the dialogue, everything, you know, done. I'm glad. So, are we thinking these actors are going to be sticking around for six episodes? Like, we're going to get six solid.
Seems like five. So, from what a lot of the early screeners are saying, is it's going to be five episodes with "Don't do that again," like scaring people. Like, wait, what? Like, five. That scared me for a second. Five. So it sounds like five episodes is with the younger actresses, and younger actors who we saw a little bit on the Valerian side,
right?
And we'll see more of. And then it sounds like six is like the big time jump.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. That's cool. That's good. That's good because they're so far just killing it, doing a great job, and we're really sort of attached to them. So it'll be cool to see.
That'll propel their careers into huge, you know.
Good. And it should, because I mean, again, I was a little bit nervous because they're young, because they're unknown and younger, but just an experienced crew and everybody around it. They did a great job.
Well, remember, it does kind of provide, I guess, I don't know. It's kind of weird, because then if you play a kid all the way through, especially in something like Game of Thrones, like remember season 8, like a lot of people were really upset for Maisie Williams to have a sex scene.
Yeah.
Because they're like, hold on, we've like seen her.
It was a little weird.
It was a little weird. But I mean, so at least here you jump to like an entirely different actress. So
it will 100% help. It'll definitely help. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
We didn't spend 10 years, you know, I mean, she had like missing teeth in the first episode, guys.
Like, right.
I just was like uncomfortable in that whole thing. I was like,
Weird. Great comment here. Okay. So, sorry, it covers up Jimmy's picture. Says, okay, I'm new to this. I've watched Game of Thrones 4 times now. Every time I see new things, small details. This episode is a great experience, great writing, and the flow of it from what we've come to expect from the original Game of Thrones brand. The Secret was a massive drop and made me see how well they are at not only paying attention to the details, but making the connection between the two shows. I'm about to hop back in and see the episode again. So many details I'm sure I will need to hear.
Lex on him.
So good. Yeah.
No, yeah.
I know. You know, it's so funny. I remember we talked about this, how we were gonna see so many comments. So many comments. Jimmy and I have been waiting for this moment. Of all of the season eight, and now everyone's like, all right, you know. Then when the first trailer was coming out, I was like, okay, low-key, like, this might be good. And now everyone's like, oh, it's just sick. It's great.
I have a friend who swore off the entire franchise, got rid of the books, everything after season 8, was just like, I'm out. And you know, more power to him. He hit me up today. Hey, said up, they got me. They got me back. He got the leaked episode early, and he said, "I'm in."
Wow.
He said, "Welcome back. We've been here carrying the banners all along, gentlemen."
Right. Yeah, that's good. That's good. People are back. I mean, listen, you know,
I listened to a lot of podcasts back in the day, and for people who don't know, you know, I met these two gentlemen, and they were the motivation for my YouTube channel because they ran such a great community post season 8. But I remember a whole lot of those old podcasts that were, you know, trying to bat with the big boys right here for bending the knee. And whenever the show ended and it wasn't cool anymore, everybody kind of went away. And you guys never stopped. You guys kept making episodes. You stuck with the fandom. You said there's still something here. And it was, you know, there was a lot of disappointment, but there's still so much to say about the journey that was on the way there. And you guys kept at it. And, you know, without you, I wouldn't have my channel or, you know, and I think you've inspired a lot of people, but I'm just saying, I see a lot of those people coming back. Uh-huh, I see a lot of those podcasts kicking back up. Hey, man, we're starting. You know, I didn't put them on my feed.
They fired back up. You're right. They did. They. Where were they? Right when when Gondor called for aid.
All right. Well, here, let me pull up some quotes from what I consider to be one of the most strict fan groups, the A Song of Ice and Fire subreddit. Okay. So their season one of House of the Dragon episode discussion. The jousting is what sold it for me. They did such a good job of depicting what I imagined it should look like. I could not be more excited for the rest of the show. I love the quick pull of the next lance. Never seen that before in jousting depiction. Really helps keep the suspense high. Absolute stunning choreography during it. Really makes me hopeful for the action. Though they're still falling a bit into the old habits of putting a million cuts into the sword fights to make them feel faster. So they're kind of focusing on that, asking about is Viserys holding the cat's paw at the end, right?
Yeah.
But I'm really digging it so far. Seems to be faithful to Fire and Blood. Well, I didn't have many doubts before. Matt Smith has sold me as Daemon. That's some of the most, you know, hardcore strict fans who, I mean, and they're pretty in on it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hardcore into the books, and I'm okay if they change stuff. I really embrace change. I can kind of separate the canons in my head. And sometimes you got to change stuff, guys. Like, you just got to change stuff. So I hope people continue to have an open mind as we continue through the season, and things are going to get changed. But I think it should be a good amount, a good amount of stuff that needs to be done. So Allison and Rhaenyra being friends, in my opinion, is very good.
Yeah, it's more like things might be revealed too as we go along.
now go to Freefall. Stuff, so. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I'll pull it up.
Is this the Reddit?
The Free Folk Reddit. Yeah, they're kind of like the saltier than crate Star Wars Reddit. Or they're just like, I'm picking every single detail.
Oh boy, here we are. That'll be
every single detail.
I don't know. I can't really find if I wanted to be super critical, which I'm not normally that guy.
They're not too bad over there. They're just kind of, you know, making fun of some stuff. Are we going to talk about Otto Hightower pimping out his own daughter? I thought I had a bad father.
Actually, the main episode thread is very positive.
Yeah, wow. I know. Wow. And they're pretty. Oh, yeah. They're like, oh, wait. Like, oh no, I liked it, you know, because they were expecting to go.
Just when I was out, they pulled me back in.
They did. So awesome. All right. Well, let's finish up here with how are we feeling? As I'll start with you, just now we've been waiting. We're finally here. Yeah. Just thoughts. And then I guess maybe your predictions for episode 2. What do we think? Where do we think we're going?
Yeah, no, I love it. I'm honestly kind of blown away, and I got to say, I've said it so many times, and I think everybody will agree with this. It's just like, it was already so good, and then at the end, just this sort of passing down of the secret, it really just took it to a whole nother level that I did not foresee, and that was the thing, too. I was a little nervous that I would come into this like, all right, I kind of read the books, I can almost sort of see where this is going to go or whatever, but then just to have it delivered and executed so perfectly and to have it just depicted so well. I don't know. I didn't, I don't know. It was just, it was so good. And I feel so good watching it and so confident moving forward. Cause you can actually, that secret, that passing down of the torch, right, from king to heir is so strong that I'll remember it the whole time. Like it's something that's just there and you don't have to ever do it again. And now you can move on with your story and you're like, wow, you've just set up the whole thing and it's, that's it. You already knocked it out of the park. It's a home run. So in the first episode, so I feel that good. And I think, you know, predictions for me going forward, I think, I really think we're going to see
episode two real quick is called The Rogue Prince.
The Rogue Prince. Okay.
We're going to the steps.
Well, clearly. Yep. Going to the steps. All right. Then. Yeah. I think you got to get, you definitely do. You have to get kind of into that and really see, get to know Damon, because you could have been 50-50 on him here. You could have said, well, I really like him, or really he's kind of a jerk or whatever. But now I think you're going to get to who he is, like a man in his cups, a man who has tried to find his place, doesn't know he's a second son. You know, where does he belong? What is his role? What is his future, his legacy, all that kind of stuff. I feel like he's going to be dealing with that, and we're going to get like connected and locked in with him. And then the next episode after that is going to be, we're going to be locked into somebody else and feeling like, oh, I don't know, they've got a pretty good story here, or you know, whatever. So it's going to be this nice back and forth. They've already set up. So I saw in the comments earlier, somebody said so many different plot lines, so many different, you know, characters to kind of follow. And that's awesome. It's wonderful. But you do have to kind of get us right into the Rogue Prince. He's the most interesting, dynamic character in the whole thing. So I'm happy to hear that's the title of the next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Jimmy.
I literally just wanted it to be a good show. I said this, I said, I'm not expecting season four Game of Thrones, but if it is a competent show that is good, doesn't have to be perfect, I'm going to enjoy it just because I love being in Westeros. Like I have that just established, right? It was way better than I expected. And I already expected it to be good, right? I think it was great. I think that we do have a lot of season left, so we got to see what goes on. Time jumps are interesting. I wonder how they'll handle it. I'm very much looking forward to seeing Damon explore Matt Smith doing this character. I just thought he stole the show. Really, I did. So I'm excited to see what happens. I'm excited to see also for all of you who have not read Fire and Blood. I almost would encourage not to at this point because like some of the stuff that happens, and I said this, I think it's as high of drama and if not more than the main series. And seeing those details get flushed out will just be amazing. But it's not often I enter a live stream kicking my feet and pumping my fist. So yeah, I loved it. It was great.
Okay. Yeah. For me, absolutely. God, man, I just loved everything about it. The look, the feel. My biggest thing was, you know, I guess for me, it's like Star Wars is my sort of comparison, where it's like, okay, you have the originals and then you go to the prequels and then you go to the sequels. And regardless of which ones you like better, or some are, you know, are they all good or whatever, it has that feel where they just like it looks and feels like Star Wars. Whereas that's what I wanted mostly for this, in order for me to even feel like season one was a success. It needed to look and feel like Game of Thrones. And that's exactly what we got. So loved it. And then it just went above and beyond and everything. And I'm with you. I actually think story-wise, I think for TV, this is actually almost a better, I don't know, I think it's almost a better framework for television than actually a regular Song of Ice and Fire is, because it's a lot more political backstabbing. It's a lot, there's dragons, but it's a little more confined. Like Game of Thrones is all over the place. You've got like story that takes place only at the wall. You've got Essos, you've got Dorne. This is actually way more confined, and I think it's easier to follow. So I'm very, very, very excited for it. Everybody knocked it out of the park. My predictions, I do think we will get a title card. I'm just going to go ahead and say, I think it's going to be the same thing as Game of Thrones. I think they're just going to go. I think they're going with it. But the cool thing is, if like by doing it in episode two, where now everyone's kind of spread out a little bit, now you give us a reason to show us different places. Because episode one is like, well, everyone's in King's Landing. But episode two, well, I don't know. You get the Valyrians. Here's Driftmark. Here's the Stepstones going over here. Here's King's Landing. We're going to see maybe some fallout in the Vale. You know, there's...
Yeah.
So you actually have a good reason to kind of bounce around the map a little bit now. So I think maybe it'll do that, but I think it'll be maybe a slightly different take on the song. It'll be maybe just some different instrumentation or something. So
yeah,
that's what sort of my hope. And then we'll definitely get to see Damon going to just wreck everybody in the step zone. So
I think it's going to be like another step up. I really do.
Oh,
and the Crab King, baby.
Yeah, let's go. So good. Yeah. So with that, we want to thank everybody who is listening on the podcast, everybody who's been watching and came to hang out with us on YouTube. Be sure to check out not only our Patreon or Apple Premium if you want extra content, because Ez and I have tons of huge theories and everything over there. I think we just looked, Ez, and we have over 100 extra podcast episodes on Patreon, which is like crazy to think about. So be sure to check that out, as well as some of our other shows. We will be covering Lord of the Rings on our Wheel of Time channel. And of course, when Wheel of Time comes back on, we do the books there, but we'll be doing the show. So that's called Heroes of the Horn. So we will be doing Rings of Power coverage there. And we do a Star Wars channel called Hyperspace Hangout. So be sure to check that out. You can find it easily on Apple iTunes, kind of links you out to everywhere. And be sure to check out Jimmy's channel, The Fantasy Network.
Yes.
On YouTube. Be definitely sure to check that out. You can follow me anywhere on the internet at Super Gains Bros, Ez anywhere on the internet at Womprat_2M, Jimmy at The Flockavelli on Twitter, and of course The Fantasy Network on YouTube. Guys, it's been absolutely great doing this live stream. Stay tuned for more. And apparently, winter is coming.
Fantastic.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.